This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. He's a senior fellow writing at Defining Ideas. Richard teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. I do not have a law education, so what I learn is from Richard's essays and also the opportunity to ask him questions about how is this commonsensical. And that's where I'm going to start in this case that he is writing about now that's before the courts. It is entitled National Pork Producers Council versus Ross. It springs from a proposition in California that was successful in 2018, in other words, 4 years hence, that requires all pork products sold in the state of California to be prepared in facilities meeting California standards of animal health and safety. Animal health and safety. That's important here. That suggests that California, with this referendum, is going to need to inspect the production of pork products that are sold into California. The details here, Richard provides that California makes up 13% of pork consumers in the U.S., but 99.8% of all pork produced in the U.S. or anywhere is produced outside of California. So the common sense of this is that California is seeking to take a regulation that it passed with a referendum and impose it on the rest of the states, maybe the rest of the planet. And one of the drivers for this is the Health Care Without Harm. That's a group that is most focused on animal cruelty. Richard, that threw me because this is about health and safety. And the production of meat anywhere can be made to look extremely unacceptable. That's the nature of the legislation that proceeded at the beginning of the 20th century under the Roosevelt administration, the muckrakers. And so, therefore, it seems inappropriate to apply muckraking standards on something that is meant to protect the health of people, not their moral opinions.
Well, it turns out that they try to argue it both ways. There is the moral sentiment, and there are a number of people have claimed that moral sentiment is enough of a reason to prevent the inhibition of goods, which creates an impossible problem because other states may have different moral sentiments, and they may therefore impose inconsistent regulation. The basic challenge is, if you're talking about the health of the goods, you would like these people to be able to identify some kind of outbreak of disease, salmonella, some bacterial infection, which came from pork that was imported from elsewhere. Everybody knows in the industry that if you create stuff which is dangerous and infectious and so forth, you're out of business. You cannot survive. You cannot recover. So they can't point to any of those things because these people are absolutely obsessed about what to them is a nuclear event. So what they do is they say it's hypothetically possible. But in order to make this, I think, a serious case, what you have to show is at least one instance of somebody in the state of California or indeed anywhere who has actually suffered the adverse effects of eating pork because of trichinosis or some such thing. They can't bring that across. If you allow the psychological upset to go, then you could change it. If you go back to the history of the Fair Labor Standards Act for overtime and minimum wages, it was also advertised as a moral issue and a health and safety issue. Underpaid workers will do very, very dangerous things with their goods. It turns out that that has been false. But now we say that California is going to say, we're not going to allow you to import into California goods that are made by workers who aren't paid the California minimum wage or by firms that don't accord with the way in which California organizes its boards. Remember, they had struck down recently the requirement that their boards be diverse by race and by gender and by all sorts of other things. So it's an extremely explosive position. The judge down below, Judge Akita, she's an excellent judge. She followed what she thought were the precedents, and I think she read them correctly, which was the only thing you could worry about was discrimination. You could not worry about heavy disproportionate imposition on out-of-state activity. Doctrinally, she may have been right on the case, but it's absolutely upside down intellectually, because the case in which it's most dangerous is when you could hurt foreign producers and not touch domestic producers. So if you don't have a domestic industry, you're going to do things that are a lot worse than if you have one. And I think what the Supreme Court did is it took this case, because whatever you may think about pork and slaughter and so forth, the potential here lies to say that the sentiments of the people in California are so strong that they can dictate how other people are going to do things if they want to sell their goods in California, which is too big a market to ignore. Other states put other things in and say, look, we will not allow you to ship it to Texas, any state that follows the principles of ESG, the left-wing view on environment, social legislation, and government. So you then get inconsistent regulation. The safe position here is what you can do is insist that anything that's imported to the state is, in fact, healthy and safe. And so, therefore, for example, as in a case called Maine against Taylor, you could stop people from bringing in certain kinds of fish, which essentially eat all the local fish that are in your particular lakes. And places like New Zealand, where they have a very vulnerable flora and fauna situation, are absolutely obsessive at the borders about bringing in things that completely disrupt the local ecology. That has to be a legitimate interest. It is an international trade. It is under all the various treaties that we have. But what California is doing here is they're going a bridge too far. And I think that the situation is likely that they will be rejected. I think they took this case to overturn it. And as you mentioned, I think that there will be some fairly uniform sentiments, both left and right, on the middle.
And the remedy, is the court involved in recommending a remedy in its decision? You indicate the possibility of a remedy. Look straightforward. Disclosure. And leave it up to the consumer whether he or she wants to consume a product that is made by this method as opposed to made by that method, knowing that the regulation would require at least a 10% increase in production costs, which you would show at the marketplace. So will the court involve itself with a remedy that is Solomonic?
Well, it turns out they can't require disclosure, but they will do is as follows. They will say, look, California claims to have this local interest in protecting its consumers who have psychological vulnerabilities. We can protect that interest, or California can protect that issue with the disclosure statute, which will allow people to segment. So it turns out they have to pick the least restrictive alternative on the production side of this thing to meet their local objectives. And disclosure does not require to change a single thing in the plant. It just simply says that when the goods come out and you know that they're marketed in California, you have to slap an extra label upon them so that people can decide. And they will say, so long as that is a viable alternative, then the idea that you're going to remake the entire industry outside the state is something which you cannot do unless it's going to be sanctioned by the federal government. So they will recommend it as being a topic of discussion. They will not mandate it as a solution to California. They'll say, if you've got that option available, you can take something which is far more intrusive.
Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing and defining ideas about a case that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear, National Pork Producers Council versus Ross. And the year 2022 is remarkably similar to the year 1935, when the New York Milk Council sought to impose its opinion on Vermont and other states. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.